Chapter 5.
Morland Sen. That is not a name I recall with any fondness. Few remember it now at all, outside the Order.
How many years ago?
126. More than a mortal lifetime.
Not something that affects you, I suppose.
Not in the same way. It was a confederacy of states. They had banded together during the worst years of anarchy. The climate is severe in those latitudes. That was also a factor. In those days, the weather satellites were all destroyed, and the winters had become punishing. Some form of association would have been required to avoid substantive depopulation, just as in other areas of the globe where the structures of civilization had degraded beyond recall. I remember the rock. It was black, like oil. The skies were heavy, and there were storms every day of the campaign, as if the heavens themselves were set against it. Equipment froze before we could use it. At every dawn we would have to light fires under the engines of the transports before we could use them. And the wind, it was like a scream, never ceasing.
Tell me of the campaign orders, the preliminaries.
This was in the early years of active expansion. The Emperor's plans had been in progress for decades by then, but we had not shown our hand openly in many places. Our stated territorial holdings were modest, enough to guarantee access to the materials we needed and to impose a cordon around the sites where our researches needed to be protected. Only when these were fully secured and our forces mustered in numbers could we advance without the stealth we had previously employed. Morland Sen was not the first kingdom we conquered. It was too far from our established centres of control. However, I believe he had marked it out for particular attention from the start. In a world of abominations, it nevertheless stood out. We had heard all the stories and had studied the spies' reports. And he knew the place. He had been here before.
For the transcript, by he, you mean?
The Emperor, of course. He was fully aware of the practices conducted there and wished to eradicate them as soon as he had the power to. That was always the principal objective, you understand, even in those early years. We were not simply fighting for territory. We were fighting to remove the taint of sorcery from Terra. I see your smile. Again, this is now not widely understood. A consequence of our success, I suppose. Say sorcery now, and you will provoke a laugh of disbelief. But during the anarchy, all manner of beliefs were held, which led many into moral corruption. The human soul, if left untended, tends to moral corruption, and that opens doors. This world had been left untended for a very long time. Many doors had been left open. Morland Sen was a kingdom of witches at the roof of the world. A realm closer to a nightmare would be hard to imagine. It combined all that was worst about the Darkened Age. There was no law, no regulation of the powerful, no true science, a willful indulgence of excess and ignorance. They had retained scraps of knowledge and put them to foul uses, giving them a veneer of military might. But it was fragile and was already beginning to come apart even as we marched on it. I considered it like a great ash tree of the region's long-forgotten myths, its trunk iron strong, but its heart eaten away by rot. He knew it could be destroyed even when other advisers counseled caution. So the order was given, and so indeed it transpired. You asked for details. The campaign was one of the first in which we deployed significant numbers of the Legionis Cattagis alongside our regular troops. It was not their first engagement, but I believe it was the first in which an entire legio was deployed. In this case, he chose the fourth, giving the cognomen at the time Iron Lords. They were specialists in siegecraft through both training and genecraft. Other legionis at that stage had not reached full battle readiness, but they were one of the first, and had impressed him with their preparedness. Alongside the Contagious, we were able to muster 22 regiments of standard troops. By then, the Imperial Army was being organized into divisions by climatic zone, for the vagaries of the planet's weather were a major impediment to true global conquest, and we were able to call on cold weather specialists. The majority of the forces we took with us were equipped with suitable armor and had access to modified weaponry. This was a necessity rather than a luxury. Conditions were such that a human exposed to the elements without technological aid or other prescribed protective methods died within hours. As I said, it was a hellish place. I often wondered what had enabled life to cling on there at all. We found our answer when we got there. And then there was the Legio Custodes. 30 warriors came with me, all assigned to protective duties. It was not anticipated that we would play the leading part in the fighting. Moreland Sen was, in many ways, a trial for the Contagious. We wished to see if they could be as lethal en masse as they had already been in their smaller formations.
You do not give them their familiar name.
I can, if you wish me to. Thunder Warrior is merely the low Gothic form.
Tell me of their Primarch.
Their commander? I'm not sure why you ask. Initially, the fighting divisions had been envisaged as somewhat smaller than they eventually became, and thus the ranks were organized on orthodox regimental lines. The Primarch was equivalent to the Captain General rank in broad terms, responsible for the discipline and conduct of the entire Legio. He was not physically different to any of his troops, but had distinguished himself in combat and leadership, and was appointed directly by the Emperor. His equipment was given particular attention, but you must remember that we were innovating all the time. Technologies were being rediscovered or recreated every year. Some troops were marching to war in fine armor, others were in generation-old fatigues. The Primarchs and their command groups naturally were given the best of what we had. There were 20 of them in conception, one for each planned legio, although by that stage not all had been given the title. The Primarch of the Fourth was Ushatan. He was a superlative warrior and a fine general. In most respects, I admired him very much.
Tell me of the fighting.
You know the histories. They are accurate. Records of all the major engagements have been deposited within the tower, and these are available to you. What more can I tell you?
How it was to be there, as a witness.
I see. I take no pleasure, nor do I experience dismay in combat. That was not the case with either our enemy or Ushatan's warriors. They were both ferocious. Our enemy was called the Priest King. It was a name he had given himself, one which was perfectly appropriate. His followers were fanatical, deranged by both combat narcotics and by the delusions he fed them. Somehow, even in that frigid waste, they had laid hands on technology from the Forgotten Age and had learned or been shown how to use it. The results were despicable. We were fighting men stitched together into mockeries of the human form. Some were encased in machines and goaded into war with pain amplifiers. Most of those we encountered, to one degree or another, had been shaped into new forms, swapping their dignity for a feral kind of strength. The perimeter cities were conquered relatively quickly, for the taint of the Priest King was lightest there, and the heartlands of the Confederacy had always been inland, up in the high peaks, where the skies flew with shards of wind-blown ice. We secured a beachhead on the southwestern lowlands, and flew in heavy landers to anchor our supply routes north. We were operating far from home, but had our familiar advantages, technology, confidence, energy. After only a month, we were planning our incursions further in. As I have said, the terrain was always against us. The unenhanced warriors suffered high rates of attrition, something that was hard to minimize. As we advanced north, many of them lost their minds. There were voices in the wind, and the cold was crushing. Those who died would be encountered again, ghosts in the gales, and it preyed on the nerves of our line troopers. We would not have been able to continue had we only been able to draw on their services. This was not unforeseen, and underscored the necessity of the gene-crafted detachments. I tell you this truly, for some are already beginning to doubt it, Terra could not have been conquered without them. We had fallen too far and let too many monsters loose. They were the weapons that allowed us to advance into that ice-locked night. So it was a hard contest, even if, with the Emperor with us, the outcome was never truly in doubt. Every citadel was contested. Every offensive was met by a counter-offensive. They knew the conditions. They knew the pattern of the landscape. They had nowhere to withdraw to. More than 7,000 of our gene-crafted shock troops died in the final assault. If you had seen how the Thunder Warriors fought, how committed they were, and how unrestrained in slaughter, you would appreciate the nature of what we faced there. Some of the weaknesses we displayed in Nordic have now been addressed. All the armor we use now is of ceramic and metallurgical alloys, rather than the steel plate and hardened leather some of us wore back then. Our blades are equipped with energy fields, and the bolt gun has replaced the old carbines and las rifles. At Moreland Sen in those days, the levels of technology were roughly comparable. What set us apart was our belief. The priest king had been hollowed out. His rantings were transparent, even to those whom he had led into damnation. But we were led by him. That, in the end, was always the difference wherever we fought.
But what was it like?
Your pardon?
What did it feel like to be there?
I am uncertain how to answer. I will do my best. There was a sickness. We could all taste it. I have encountered similar sensations since, when fighting other enemies of allied origin, but then it was new to me. It generated little but disgust in me and my brothers. For the Thunder Warriors under Ushatan, it seemed to have a different effect. They thrived on it, at least for a time. They had, I surmised, the capacity to magnify whatever foulness they faced. That ferocity was useful, but it had its weaknesses. The walls around the final stronghold had been constructed in the mountains. The fortifications were set high and were well defended, and they had prepared for us over many years. I remember looking at it on the final night before the order was given to destroy it. It was lit from behind by a greenish light, and its black walls gleamed. There was an art to its construction, but a twisted one. Every angle of its immense defences seemed to embody pain in one form or another. Set alongside the physical challenges, there was also the presence of other obstacles. Ghosts dogged us.
You mean that figuratively, I presume?
No. I use what seems to me the proper term. It might have been wiser to slow the pace of the assault, to limit our eventual casualties. But by then, the contagious were caught in a cycle of aggression. Death meant nothing to them. For a time, it seemed that orders meant nothing to them either. They were elemental in their violence. So, I remember that city, lost in the dark and the ice at the edge of the world. The snow was piled up around it in drifts 10 meters deep. Its high battlements were lined with flame weapons. When we assaulted and brought up our own heavy guns, we created a flood of meltwater. We were advancing through torrents of it, a grey sea of filth that found its way inside our armour seals. The tank stalled and the electrical relays burst. We were reduced to infantry engagements faster than anticipated, and still the walls were intact. Ushatan made the first breakthrough. There was more slaughter than I would have countenanced once he was inside. Not all the priest king's people were corrupted. Some were slaves, and others might still have been salvaged for productive employment within the Imperium. In that, though, the Thunder Warriors demonstrated their greatest weakness. They were like the munitions we used back then, powerful but unstable. Once loosed, they were hard to control. They broke through the inner chambers like a tide, slaughtering all they encountered. They demonstrated then the sheer power of the gene-crafted soldier. If we had wished for an indication of their prowess, we could not have had a clearer one. And yet, so many had died on both sides, it felt wanton. I spoke to Ushatan after the citadel had finally been taken, its roofs broken and its walls pounded into rubble. It was by then far into the following night. An entire diurnal cycle had passed in fighting, and we had barely looked up to notice it. I remember how his armor was, covered in already freezing blood. His helm was gone, and his arm was broken. A fresh storm had descended, and the battlefields were buffeted with new snow, covering up the tracks of grey slush we had exposed. He was laughing when we met. He had a vivid light in his eyes. I thought he looked like the ghost of all murders.
What did he say?
He told me that he understood, for the first time, the reason he had been made. He told me that I would never feel the same way, and that he pitied me for that.
Did you respond?
I was troubled, as I recall, not by the comment nor the implied insult, but by the sentiment expressed. I felt as if we had unleashed something that would be hard to keep within bounds.
Where did this feeling lead you? Where did this feeling lead you, Captain General?